worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Jonathan Robinson, and he's the author of More Love, Less Conflict, a communication playbook for couples. And I'd say that this works for any significant relationship.
It's absolutely.
You don't have to be in a couple, but people we work with, our siblings, I mean, our neighbors, you know, it can work with in lots of different situations. And is there anything that you want to add to that, what we were talking about when we're talking to someone and they're distracted and how hard it is? That doesn't set up a good communication avenue.
Yeah, you know, the average American interrupts somebody 12 times a day, according to studies. And what interruption is basically saying is this: what you have to say is so boring or such a waste of my time that I'm going to stop you right now to save me a few precious seconds and tell you what's really important. That is what an interruption is. Now, the fact that that's invisible to us and we allow each other to do it 12 times a day shows the state of our communication. So I certainly recommend to people, try not to interrupt people because it's rude. And to realize that if you can be somebody who isn't distracted, who isn't interrupting, and just doing the basics, you will once again shine because you're competing in a certain way against people who don't listen, who are playing with their smartphone, who are interrupting. And those people don't really get a depth of connection that they're really wanting deep down.
Yes, yes. And that's a practice. I mean, it's like working out in a gym and getting stronger. You need to practice that, practice holding your tongue, so to speak.
Exactly.
And then maybe being more curious. And you might find out something surprising that you were assuming one thing, and then you might find something else shows up.
Yeah. I ask a lot of questions, and obviously you do too, which is like, well, why are you thinking that? Or what's your thinking about that? Or why do you view it that way? Or anything like this. And, you know, that's a natural thing for me. I wasn't good at this naturally. I was a very shy, depressed teen. But I wanted to have sex with women. And I realized that communication was a key. So that's what initially got me. I'm no saint here.
That was a high motivation.
Yeah, I was very motivated as a teenager that way. So that got me reading books and helped me to learn this. And that's why I can teach it, because I don't have natural skill. Some people are naturally skilled at this and they can't teach it because, you know, it's like breathing. But when you break it down, it really comes down to like some fill-in-the-blank sentences, some very simple methods that anybody can learn in a couple hours if they are interested. And the payoff is pretty immense.
That reminds me of something that you talk about, the language of love, learning the language of love. And you give a striking example in your book of something in your own life.
Yeah.
Please tell that story, because I think it really points out something that we've all experienced.
Yeah. Well, so I met when in my early 20s, I had a girlfriend that would tell me that she loved me a lot. And I never told her that I loved her. The words "I love you" were very uncomfortable for me. So one day I'm massaging her, as I often did, and she said, "Would you cut that out?" And I was like taken aback, like, "Well, what?" She said, You're always touching me. You're always grabbing me." And I said, "Yeah, that's my way of showing you that I care about you." And she said, "Well, I don't feel very loved. I mean, you never tell me that you love me." I had to admit that that was true. And yet she told me that she loved me all the time. So we were discussing what was going on here. And when I was a kid, I had a stepfather who, whenever I did something he thought was wrong, he would take out his strap and he'd hit me with it. But before he'd do that, he would say, "I'm doing this because I love you." So I associated the words "I love you" with "I'm about to beat the crap out of you." So she told me these words. She thought she was being loving, but every time I was like, "Uh-oh, here it comes," you know. And she took my massages as a sign of impending doom because she used to have an uncle who would give her massages, and one day he raped her. So she took my massages as I'm about to get, you know, molested. So we both thought we were doing something loving for the other person, but we were actually doing the worst thing possible because we never asked each other what helps you to feel loved or what triggers you, which is a very useful conversation to have. I have a chapter in the book about that. You know, knowing what your partner's triggers are, knowing what makes them feel loved, because it's very different than what makes you feel loved, most likely.
And we make assumptions about, well, we assume this is, if I do this for my partner, then they'll know that I love them.
Right.
And I know Michael would, my partner, he would often use the words for me, I love you. He would say those, but that did not impact me like if he did some demonstration of some service.
Some act, yeah.
Some
mm-hmm.
act. Mm-hmm. That's where I would feel loved.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I'm not sure that we ever really got over that. We didn't have your book at that time.
Well, people don't know this information and their relationship suffers. But it's not rocket science. You can learn that information in 2 minutes if you ask the right question.
And that's the key. And that's what you are all about. And you mentioned that earlier. It's like asking good questions, asking the effective questions. I think in the Buddhist tradition, it's being effective in our speech, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I just find that so great. I'm reminded Einstein said, if I want to solve a problem in an hour, if I spend 55 minutes on asking the right question, then I can solve it in 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And you, that's what you were about.
Yeah, one of the things, because I find it so quick and so effective, I'm actually really about what can I do in under a minute that will lead to more love and more peace. And questions are a great way of doing that if you have the right question.
You know, and some people would say, 1 minute, come on. But, you know, I got to say, like, they'll say, oh, that's just a quick fix. And I think that you would challenge that.
Well, take something like, what helps you feel loved? My wife answered that. Totally different than what helps me feel loved. That's very useful information. That's not just useful for that minute. That's useful for until the day we die. We have a friend for life now that I know that information. Or how about, you know, if you're trying to enjoy each other in the bedroom, what do you really like sexually? Most couples have not a clue. So their love life is much worse because they don't know this useful information. It doesn't take long to get that information. Or, you know, when we communicate what would help when you're talking about difficulties, what would you like from me? Well, the woman might want empathy. The man might want suggestions of how to change the situation. But if they don't know that information, they will suffer because of their ignorance.
You know, and you brought up sex life. Now, that's kind of a foreboding subject. And many couples don't approach that. They just kind of suffer through certain things that they don't really care for, they wish their partner would, and they that conversation, for some reason, there's so much shame around it or something going on. Do you have any clue as what's going on, why we don't talk more freely with one another?
Well, obviously, there's so much shame around sexuality. And we have a hard time saying what we want because there's some vulnerability there. And, you know, if you have the right method, once again, it can help you around that. Like, for example, I suggest that people write down a piece of paper. It takes 2 minutes. 3 things I really love about our love life are, and be specific. 3 things that I don't really care for are. You exchange sheets. You're done. You did it in 3 minutes. You just improved your love life probably 100%.
Yeah. There you go. One of the exercises that you have is yellow light, red light.
Yeah.
And I thought that was good. Can you describe what that is all about?
You know, when you're stressed is when your communication tends to be the worst. And you develop a momentum, you get into the anger, and then you say stupid things, and then you have an argument, and then you have to spend days, hours, whatever, repairing that. I found that if you have the two, if you can say two words when stressed, you can avoid all of that. I like those two-word methods. And the two words can either be yellow light or red light. A yellow light means let's take a two-minute timeout and just sit here silently and see if we can calm down, re-engage our prefrontal cortex rather than our lizard brain, and be able to talk this out by just taking a little bit of time out so we can calm down. A red light means like we're both incredibly triggered when we're about to, you know, smack each other or something. Let's take an hour time out and come back and see if we can talk this out. Couples that do that can literally end their arguments. I have couples that have argued four times a week for 40 years, and they, using this one simple method, they eliminate their arguments. You know, a good technology can do something like that. And anybody, even when stressed out, can say two words. So I love that method because it's so effective and so easy and has a large effect on relationships.
And I love it in your book. You say, if you say yellow light and your partner then keeps talking, what you
there's a penalty.
There's
yes.
a penalty. Can you describe the penalty? I love that.
Yeah. Well, if they say red light and you keep talking, there's a penalty. And that was, it's a dollar per word. So if you say 20 words after they said red light, it's a violation. So it's you have to pay them a dollar per word. And once I did that with my wife, because I was very upset, and I ended up saying like two sentences. It was 20 words. I paid the money. Either you pay it to them or you can rip it up. That's the other thing you can do. And I'm cheap, so I've never had to do that again since then.
Yeah, right. That's great. But that also points out that you're still working on it. You're
absolutely
not, you know, that you still use this right now. You've been married for several decades. And it's not like you're not in the middle of the soup with the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book many years ago called Communication Miracles for Couples, and it became a bestseller. And as I used the methods, I saw that some of them were actually too complex for me to use when I was upset. So then I thought, well, how can we make this even easier and simpler? And that's where I came up with the methods in More Love, Less Conflict.
That's great. I just love it because you're your own guinea pig, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Jonathan Robinson, and he's the author of many books, including one of my favorite, Life's Big Questions. That was the first book I ever discovered of yours, and I just loved it. It's a short book, but it's 200 Ways to Explore Your Spiritual Life. And I just continue to refer to that one because they have so many good questions. And, of course, More Love, Less Conflict, A Communication Playbook for Couples. And if you want to know more about his work, go to his website, morelovelessconflict.com. Or you can give there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. here with Jonathan Robinson, and he's the author of More Love, Less Conflict, A Communication Playbook for Couples. And Jonathan, I'd love for us to do another demonstration of one of the techniques that you talk about in the book, if you'd like to share one with
us. There's so many, but here's one that's very easy to explain. It's fill in the blank, and you can do this with anyone, anytime. It immediately leads to getting to know each other very deeply and quickly. And it's filling in the sentence, if you really knew me, you would know blank. So, Justine, if you really knew me, you would know. And when I do interviews, I'm always a little worried that I might be coming off too much as a salesman, because I feel very passionately about this stuff. I want to shake people and say, you need to know this stuff, you know. But so I'm always like, tone it down. Just, you know, come off that way, because I don't like salespeople. So if you really knew me, you'd know that that's a issue I'm always struggling with on interviews.
Well done. Well done. I wouldn't have known that. Yes.
There you go.
I'd like to share. Yeah. If you really knew me, you would know that before every interview, I am completely out of sorts. And I'm thinking, oh, I hope this goes well. Oh, I wonder if I'm up for this. I'm wondering, can I really help this interview be all that I know it could be, because I'm excited about what I read? And I just feel ill-equipped to actually be able to facilitate. And so I come into it with a little bit of that anxiety. I mean, sometimes not just a little bit, with a lot of that anxiety. But I must admit that once I sit down with the guest, then that first question rolls out, then it does disappear, and we're just there together. And I'm just so grateful for that. And I do a little prayer of thanksgiving to my invisible support, spiritual support, at some point early on to be with me. So if you really knew me, you know that.
I didn't, because you're so good at what you do. I didn't know that you went through that. You know, when we, as I said earlier, when people share intimate details into me, see, there's more connection. There's less of a wall there. There's less separateness. And it feels really good. I've had people do that, strangers do that in workshops in 10 minutes, and they would say, I feel more connected to this person than I do my entire family in 10 minutes with a stranger. So these are powerful technologies. You want to make sure you use them well, because if you use them well, you'll have a lot of love in your life, but they are powerful. So you want to make sure that you use them as like sacred medicine.
Yes. I like that, as sacred medicine, so you have a respect for them.
Yeah.
You're not just flipping them out as some parlor game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I would love to have you speak about trust. And I know that we say that money is the grease of business.
Yeah, it's a currency in business.
The currency of business. And you say that trust is a currency of relationships. So can you elaborate?
Yeah. Well, when we are spending time with somebody, we're always, in a way, subconsciously asking, can I trust this person? Do they have my goodwill at heart, or are they trying to get something from me? Even in businesses, you know, there's certain businesses, like I will buy anything from Apple, no matter how much it costs, because their service is really good, and I trust that service. And I will do everything I can to avoid other companies, because when you call them, they say, your call is very important to us. That's why we hired one person in India to cover the entire United States. Please be on hold for the next 2 hours while we give a recording of how important your call is to us. I don't trust those people because they're lying to me. And trust, when you trust somebody, it's very easy to open in love. It's very easy to work out problems. But if you don't have trust, you don't have love, and you can't work out problems because there's no trust. So it's like the soil of which love and relationship grows. And, you know, problems aren't the problem, because in working through problems, well, trust develops and you develop roots, so that, you know, a couple that's worked out 100 problems with each other and they develop a lot of trust, they know that no matter what crap hits the fan, they'll be able to handle it.
And you talk about how trust, you develop a bank account.
Yeah.
And you need to make, I like the idea of roots, but another metaphor is you have to put money into that bank account regularly. And you talk about how divorce is kind of a bankruptcy.
Yeah. You're saying, like, we have no more trust here. Let's declare bankruptcy. Whereas if you, let's say you've built up a lot of trust with somebody, you have $1 million in that emotional bank account. When something happens, maybe even an affair, which is a breach of trust, you can handle it. It's a withdrawal, but you have stuff to withdraw.
Yeah.
You know, so life gives us difficulties that we do have to occasionally make withdrawals. You want to make sure that you have some trust in that bank account so that you can when you need it.
So, Jonathan, what about, I'm going to go to like Maslow's hierarchies of needs. So what about if a couple is facing like that bottom foundational bedrock level of feeling unsafe?
Yeah.
Like maybe their roof over their head is threatened, or maybe they're, one of them has lost their job and their livelihood, or maybe their children are threatened. These are like some of that bedrock stuff. And that is very, very stressful. What advice do you have if people are working from that level of stress?
Yeah. Well, you know, the simple act of saying things that you can appreciate, it might be really small. Like, I really appreciate how, even though you have all this stress going on, that you weren't upset at me yesterday. Or when you gave me that smile yesterday, you're starting to build some goodness there, some trust there to counteract the stress. That's one thing you can do. But as you know, it's incredibly healing if couples can give empathy to each other, if you can give empathy to yourself, and I talk about how to do that, sometimes you need an emergency dose of self-empathy because your partner just can't give you any in that moment. If you can give it to yourself or if you can give it to others, it's like having $1 billion in the bank because you have something that everybody wants.
So, for example, how would I give myself empathy in that situation?
Well, you might say, and I give examples but in the book, but you might say, hey, you're going through a really hard time. This is incredibly stressful. The fact that you're not freaking out is amazing. You're really doing a great job. Just take some deep breaths. Be sure and take care of yourself. I love you. You're really hanging on well. It's only going to last a little bit longer. And make sure that this is going to pass.
Yeah.
That might be the way I would do it.
That takes me to one other that you have that I don't think we've covered so far. And this is where we misinterpret the information in front of us.
Yeah.
That we make this assumption that, okay, this is what it means. Oh, you give that great example of going back to India.
Yeah, yeah.
The man who goes to the guru for heaven and hell to describe heaven and hell.
Yeah, I'll give the story. So person goes up to a monk and asks, well, if you're so wise, teach me a lesson about heaven and hell. And the monk says, teach you? I couldn't teach you anything. You're ugly. You're disgusting. You smell bad. You don't have a carrying bone in your whole body. Just get out of my sight. And the man gets red in the face. He shakes with rage, and he's ready to punch the monk in the face. And the monk says, that's hell. And he realizes this monk risking beating up to teach him this lesson about hell. And he's amazed, and he unclenches his fists. And in deep gratitude, he bows to the monk, and the monk says, and that's heaven. So what I like about the story is that based on how we interpret the events in our life and how we interpret communications, we create heaven or hell. He created a moment of hell for himself at first by interpreting that this monk is putting him down for no good reason. And then he created a moment of heaven for himself by realizing that this monk actually risking beating up to serve him. And that was all based on interpretation. Now, I don't know about you, Justine, but I sometimes misinterpret things. And one question has been very helpful in getting me to see that I may not have all the facts, and that is the question, what else could this mean? So, you know, a few weeks ago, I told my wife, oh, be sure and call me tonight, you know, because it's the only time I have available, blah, blah, blah. And she didn't call. And I thought, she doesn't really care about me. I told her something that was really important to me, and she didn't do it. I'm like, I'm starting to get into that. And then that question came up, well, what else could this mean? Well, she could be in a car accident, or could be that something happened with our dogs and she's taking care of it, or whatever. And then I was less sure. So I was no longer angry. I was more a little bit concerned. And it ends up that something had happened with our dogs that she needed to take care of. And so when she called me the next day, it was like, oh, thank God you're okay. Thank God the dogs are okay. But if you don't have that little, what else could this mean, you can misinterpret stuff and have it be resentful for years.
So great example. And you've given so many wonderful examples that just give a little taste and flavor of what your work is about. And I just suggest that people look it up. So I thank you so much, Jonathan, for being with us today.
Yeah.
I've been here with Jonathan Robinson. He's the author of More Love, Less Conflict, A Communication Playbook for Couples. And if you want to know more about it, you can go to his website, morelovelessconflict.com.
Or I do want to mention that people can go to the website and download the 12 Questions of Instant Intimacy for free. And these are questions that no matter who you ask, they always lead to a deep, open, intimate conversation. And it's a really great gift to explore.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, so people will be stimulated to follow through and look it up. And that's morelovelessconflict.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3647.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973. Thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Sarah Ann Shockley, author of The Pain Companion. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about everyday wisdom for living with and moving beyond chronic pain.
Hello, this is Boris Chassaigne. To get a feel on what's happening across the country, listen to Viewpoints. For reports, interviews, and documentaries on politics, arts and culture, the environment, housing, and more. Thanks to 30 journalists stationed in the Canadian provinces and territories, local news nationwide. Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM and streaming online at cjsf.ca.